Today on the Cooligans, we are focused on Ricardo Pepi. He might be going to the Premier League. We're also talking some USMNT because we might have a future coach already waiting in the wings, and he's from New Jersey.
Uh-oh, and another coach we're going to talk about is Michael Carrick. What a start. Why'd you have to do it to me, Michael? And then, you know, I bumped him one day. I moved him out of the way to meet Ian Wright, and I feel like he just paid me back for that, now showing him respect. And then, of course, we talk about Trinity Rodman. Oh, my God. I'm so happy for her. I'm happy for the Washington Spirit. But we ain't happy for what's going on with the rest of the league. We talk about that and a lot more today on the Cooligans. So I went to grab a couple drinks with a buddy. You know Mike Albanese.
Yes, no one else does, yeah. But
well, I was about
to
say, very funny comic, but now that you said that, whatever, maybe you should walk around with a bag on his head. I went to meet up with him, and I was busy. I was doing stuff, and he was like, yo, let's go hang out. And a bunch of comics that live in Queens were like, let's go hang out. So I was like, yo, I'm in the city. And he was like, yo, why don't we meet for a drink first in the city, and then we'll head out to Queens. So I said, all right. Equidistant to us, right in the middle, was Hotel Chelsea, which is a very fancy hotel, just got completely redone. Also where Chelsea Clinton got her name from. Lord knows, maybe that's where she was conceived. But it's right on 23rd okay. Street, right next to Gotham Comedy Club.
Let's ask Adam Friedland about it.
Yeah, I'm sure he knows. We're like, yo, let's meet. Now, it's a very fancy place. A Manhattan drink, like a Manhattan or an old fashioned, they run about $40 to $45 each at this place.
What?
Yeah, no, it's very fancy.
It's one very hard drink, $40 to $45.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
You do not make enough money to order a drink there. What the hell are you doing?
Also, Christian, why are you acting like you just came off of a time machine? Is there a reason? You know what Manhattan price is. This is a very fancy bar, and you already know what Manhattan prices are.
Ridiculous.
Manhattan, the city.
25 is like a lot for Manhattan.
That's actually pretty standard now. Yeah, so if you're in a fancy place, it's $40, $40. It is expensive. It's one of the most expensive bars in the city. But a friend of ours, Tushar, knows one of the bartenders, so we never pay that, right? So I was like, oh, perfect. Mike suggested it. I'm thinking, hey, I'm going to pay $5 each for these drinks. It's a really fancy bar. We get a seat right at the corner of the bar. The bar is like 4 or 5 people deep waiting, but we happen to get a seat. So this is perfect. So we get a seat. Mike and I, he orders 2 old fashions. I order 1 Manhattan. So we're about $140 to $50 each. We're at about $150. We also order fries. Fries are $15, by the way. So you can get about 3 orders of fries for the cost of one drink.
Disgusting.
It's crazy. It's a good amount of fries, by the way. So the $15 doesn't feel like a lot. It actually, you're like, what a good deal compared to the drinks. Anyway, the place is filled with like, there's like celebrities. There's like multiple rooms. It's like being in an old mansion. There's like multiple rooms you can get drinks in. The bar's like 3 or 4 people deep. And this guy with like, I don't know how to explain his beard. It's like really manicured. Rich guy beard. You know what I mean? He looks like he's leaning against a beautiful armoire in an ad for a suit. You know what I mean?
Okay.
He's, by the way, expensive suit, but you could tell this guy he just started making money. You know what I mean? He ain't been rich his whole life. You know what I mean? He just got here. He's got this beautiful lady on his arm. He leans over and he goes, hey, you fellas almost done. Would love to have your seats when you're done. And I said, actually, we're making a phone call. We're supposed to be friends. We might be out of here right now. But we won't know till the end of the call. So he goes, let me know as soon as you're ready. Mike makes the call. Our buddy Pavone doesn't pick up. So now we're just kind of like hanging out, finishing our drinks, figuring out if we should have another one or not. That's when Mike realizes the bartender he knows isn't there. He's texting him. He's not getting a response. So we're now paying $150. For these drinks.
Yeah, the bill's coming. The real bill.
So I'm like, should we have another? I'm like, we absolutely should not, right? Because now that's rent. So I'm thinking to myself, like, all right, let's just pay up and then we could go get something cheap to eat, whatever. I had one drink. It's really not that big of a deal. I spent $45. And plus half of a fries. It's not like it didn't cost me way insane too much. We had a nice drink. Let's get out of here. The guy leans over again. He goes, hey, you guys almost done. My lady would really like to sit. So a little bit of a dick move.
Got it. Yeah.
So I look over. His lady is right there, can hear us. And I go, you really want these seats? Why don't you buy our drinks? And the guy's like, would you have a couple girly drinks? Now he's trying to look cool in front of his lady.
Oh,
he's like,
a
couple pina coladas? And I go, actually, I had a Manhattan and he had two old fashions. And he's like, oh, yeah? And he's like, you could see the pressure in his eyes. Like, now I actually got to pay for these drinks.
Right. He goes,
well, oh, would you put in it rye or bourbon? It's like, okay, we both got rye. We both got Michter's rye. And he goes, that is pretty good. He's like, all right. And the girl's looking at him like, just buy the drink so I could sit down. He goes, all right, yeah, I'll do it. So before he could even...
You guys met apparently an 80s bully. What?
Bro, he actually said yes. I immediately look at the bartender, who was this dope Mexican dude from Queens. We just started talking about like Puebla York and stuff like that. I was like, hey, he's buying our drinks. Can you just charge me for the fries and I'll tip you? And the guy's like, all right. Starts tapping into the machine right away. And the guy's like, well, how many drinks did you have? You know, he's like starting to get nervous. And before he could say anything, I pay for the... It was $15 for the fries. I tipped the bartender $30 because I'm like, whatever. Now this is my contact. Next time I come in, I'm good.
Right.
Him and I just split $50 drinks plus fries for what amounted to $15 each, or like whatever, $20 each. Absolutely crazy. We left there laughing our asses off. Can you believe this rich guy actually paid for our drinks?
Well, I mean, he has to, you know, can't be embarrassed in front of his lady that he paid for, I guess.
Oh, either that. I just imagine that night he couldn't get it up. You know what I mean? Like, it was all for nothing.
Okay. Well, look what it turned out to be a much more frugal story than I expected.
I walked out of there like. Is this what ladies feel like? Is this what it feels like to be a lady at a bar? Some asshole comes up to you and says, like, I'll buy your drinks. You're like, all right, I'm not going to talk to you.
You sort of negged your way into some free, $150 worth of drinks.
He tried to be a big dog. And I said, let's see how much of a big dog you are. You know what I mean?
All right.
Here's $150. And by the way, went to Margaritaville after that, right over here.
Oh, look at that. And got your girly pina coladas.
Bro,
You deserved it.
The sweetest, absolute sweetest drinks. Which, by the way, I don't know if you know this. Margaritaville, if you're ever in the neighborhood, don't go. It is exactly what you think it's going to be. And also, way more expensive than I thought it should be. But on the rooftop, there's a bar that's obviously not open right now because it's a lot of outdoor seating. But the indoor part of it's a little small. They have karaoke on Friday nights. I didn't know this.
Dude.
Did you know that there's, like, a bunch of people who live in the city who go to Margaritaville just for the karaoke, but there's one guy who ruins it for everyone because he refuses to do anything but show tunes. You know, the bartender, right. Everyone
else.
Seems
fun. What do you mean?
Fully annoyed. This guy, by the way, he's doing all the characters, and we tried to mess with him because he was sitting next to us. We're like, yo, dude, you crushed that, dude. You got that. And he goes, I did all the parts. That's better than Broadway.
Okay.
This guy loves himself, and he's just ruining everyone's time. I had a great time. What a Friday night.
Okay. Sounds a lot like Alexis Guerrero, so I see why you connect.
You know how much I love doing Beauty and the Beast musicals.
Welcome to the Cooligans, everybody. My name is Christian Polanco.
Hey, I'm Alexis Guerrero.
We out here in a snow-ravaged New York City.
Buddy, it's
a
all
big
right.
Snowfall.
I made through, it to the studio. We good.
A lot of American cities. We're trying to, not stay locked into the news because it's incredibly sad and depressing. So that is why the Cooligans are here to cheer you up.
That's
so
right.
Welcome to the show. We got a lot to cover today. Today we have to obviously start in England and with the Premier League. Fulham is ready to spend close to $40 million on Ricardo Pepi, but there's a little bit of a problem. He has a broken arm right now. Is this a transfer masterclass or a desperate gamble for Pepi that could ruin the USMNT strikers' World Cup chances?
I think this is a great transfer for Ricardo Pepi. I think this is a great transfer for Fulham. The timing of it, though, I'm a little worried.
I mean, this is when it would happen, right? This is the timing because this is the transfer window. But I'm a little bit worried. I don't have any real reason to think this is going to work out.
This is the top topic.
See, and I disagree with you. I think it actually is going to work out. And let me explain why. To me, the type of player that can go to where a team like PSV, at the position he was in his career. Remember, when he goes, when he gets that transfer to the Bundesliga, he goes to Augsburg, which is just an absolutely terrible team. And everyone's like, oh, what a mistake. Come back to MLS. And then what happens? And then he goes to Groningen and he proves he should be a starting striker. Gets the move to PSV and everyone's like, what are you doing, dude? Now you're a backup. And the striker ahead of you is a like the captain and a legend in the making. What are you going to do? And then he bides his time and he proves he should be the starting striker. Starts scoring buckets every time he comes in as a sub. He continues to prove himself. This feels like the next step in part of that proving. To me, yeah, you're going to go in. You're not the starting striker, but you also got a broken arm, so you probably weren't going to be a starting striker anywhere if you made a move. And to me, he's like the right profile for what the Premier League is looking for moving forward versus like the old Troy Deeney type of strikers, which to me, it's like, what a perfect way to go, right? Get into a club like Fulham that's top of mid-table, you know what I mean? Constantly flirting with a European position. If he can be the guy to push him to that next level, dude, he's going to be able to get a transfer at any club he wants.
If he could. That's kind of where I'm at. Where I'm like, I would love if it's a good move. I would love if it's and he finds some success. I think the level is gonna be quite high. So as far as the connection between him, you know, getting on that World Cup roster, we know like he was left off, you know, and you know it was a bummer, right? He was left off the roster in 2022. This was. You know, he came back to the national team. He developed and he had some good performances. But the problem for him is that other players have also had really good performances. Patrick Adjiman at Derby County scoring a few goals. He's doing pretty well. Obviously Haji Wright doing really well at Coventry also. So. He will be coming in effectively to replace Raúl Jiménez. Is he better than Raúl Jiménez right now? I don't think so, right? I think the gap is a little bit wide. But again, he could develop into that Raúl Jiménez replacement at Fulham. And Fulham is like a pretty good team right now. They're in decent form. They get some pretty good results. Harry Wilson has been fantastic. So the credit I'll give to him is that he will be going into a team that's in form, that's doing pretty well in the Premier League. So you would hope that he could just get on that, you know, the Pepe train or get on that train of success. So, yes, he has the injury. He's not going to be back to March. He broke his forearm. That's kind of I think my reservation here is just that I'm like just kind of worried that the Premier League might be a little too much for him.
You got to give me an understanding of why you think that.
Because of his performances recently with the national team, right? The misses, the really big miss, what was it, against Ecuador or Uruguay? I don't remember who it was against. He's look, if he was... not to poo-poo the Eredivisie. Like I think it's a good league. It's just the jump is pretty huge.
You could say that about any league to the Premier League, right? The gap is pretty big.
If it was La Liga to the Premier League, I would not say it's as big. If it was even Bundesliga to Premier League, I would say it's like the gap
certainly
is
not
a little
as
bit big.
There's still a gap.
So I'm hopeful. I'm trying to be as optimistic as possible. I still think there's a strong possibility Ricardo Pepi misses the World Cup. These friendlies, if he's not fit enough to be able to play in them, I think Pochettino is probably going to go with Balogun, Haji Wright, and Adjiman. As the three strikers, but and it would be really disappointing for two World Cups in a row for Pepe to be on that bubble, leaving PSV right now and going to Fulham, you're going to a better team. The team is already successful. You can't mess up the chemistry that they already have, and you're coming back from a pretty big injury. There's sort of it, it's It's a risky move only for the sake of making it to the 2026 World Cup. But long term, how do you say no to a move like that as a player? This is a good opportunity for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great opportunity. I disagree with you that, sure, his national team form hasn't been the greatest the last two times we saw him. But I don't think that that negates the type of player he's shown to be in club form. And it feels like the right next step in his career is the Premier League. And I, you know, we're looking at this and going, but Fulham is this, Fulham is that. I think if we were going to a Manchester City or a Arsenal or, you know, even a Chelsea, we'd look back and go, this doesn't feel like the right move. We're constantly asking for American players to get an opportunity to not be in a relegation battle when they go to the Premier League and to not, you know, don't go to a club where you're probably going to be loaned out for the next 2-3 years, right? Fulham is exactly that level where he's going to be able to fight for a spot. If you look at his body makeup, he doesn't have the big physical force. Well, he's a tall guy, but he's not a physical force like you'd see him put pressure on a back line, right? You know, the Jokeres body type, the Troy Deeney body type. He don't have that, right? But he has that Kai Havertz body type. He has, and he has the requisite skills to play like a Havertz. I don't know if he's as good as, or certainly hasn't shown it yet. He's still young. He's still a developing player. I feel like it's the right move. The point, while I will agree, is timing-wise, you want to be in top form by the time the World Cup comes so that it is, you know, undeniable that you deserve a spot on the squad. I think if you look at the breadth of all of his work across the board, I think he is undeniable. The problem is, Pochettino, we've shown, or has shown, he makes decisions based on where are you right at this moment? What could you do for me today? Now, what have you done for me yesterday? What are you going to bring to this World Cup? And if you make a move now, which he looks like he will, and you're not going to get form or match fit, let's say mid-March is when it looks like it's going to be back, reportedly back from his broken arm. So now we're talking about mid-March. That doesn't leave you a lot of time to prove to a new club that you deserve minutes, to go to a higher level than you've currently played, show up in a big way and prove to the coach of your national team that you deserve a spot on the squad. I think you are clearly the second choice at the moment and potentially could be the first choice if you do all those ifs and buts and all those asterisks that I just laid out. If you prove to everyone you deserve a starting spot before the end of the season, which is crazy to think about, at Fulham, then yes, you deserve to be the starter on the men's national team because it is, to me, still between him and Balogun. So to think of a scenario where he doesn't even end up on the squad seems insane to me.
I mean, it felt insane when he got left off last time, but it happened, right?
Yeah, but he was still really young, and it just felt like, oh, you're not bringing him because of the potential. Now he's shown the potential's real. You get what I'm saying?
Sure. I mean, look, I don't think you would, you know, who got his spot? Was it Haji Wright?
Yeah, because remember, I think, was it somebody tweeted out Haji wrong? Like, he was like out of nowhere, Haji Wright makes it to the squad when he hadn't even been considered before. Yeah.
Look, you're saying like undeniable. I mean, he's not even in that stratosphere of like undeniable. There's plenty to deny. And then
you don't
that
think
is
he's
not-
undeniably your second, if not first, best striker on the U.S. men's national team?
No. Okay, no, so let's undeniable. Say yeah, he can make a. He's making a case. Sure,
I think
not
it's
undeniable.
I think
that's,
who do you
ridiculous.
Think is who do you think is proven to be better than him? Outside of Balogun. Balogun is the 1-2 that we always argue. Outside of him, if you were to say Balogun is...
I don't think anybody has proven. I'm not using the word undeniable for any, but Balogun is the first choice. And then the other, Haji Wright, and Pepe are the next three. One of those is going to be left out.
Out of those three, if you look at the breadth of their work, you don't think Pepe is head and shoulders above the other two? Ajimang for sure.
But if you look at their work, looking at their work is different than the fact that what's currently happening right now, which is Pepe's injured. He's not going to have, he's going to be going to a new club, adjusting to the Premier League, which is going to be its own challenge, adjusting to coming back from your arm being broken. And he's not going to have a lot of time to adjust and then also impress. And he's going to the top league in the world and the most difficult.
But so let's talk about the four options that we have at striker, right? Balogun, Pepe, Ajimang, and Haji Wright, right? Let's say those are the top four. Balogun, we know. You don't think in top form, everyone at their peak, you don't think Pepe is immediately your number two, if not number one? Everyone at peak form?
Yes.
That's what I mean by undeniable. I don't think he is an undeniable talent, right? I wouldn't put him in that category because then you're top striker in the world. But out of those four, if everyone is in the same form, if everyone is on their top form, Pepe is for sure your number two, if not your number one, easily. And I can understand you arguing he's the number one if everyone is in peak form. That's why I think it's stupid to suggest, and that doesn't mean Pochettino's not going to do it, but to me, it would be dumb to suggest he doesn't immediately belong as your number two on the national team. Because I think...
I would have said the same in 22.
Sure. Yeah, I wouldn't have. I would have assumed he would have made the squad. But to me, it was still a little early based on his club form to consider that. Now, proven to me and everyone else...
It was Balogun in 22. It was Balogun, Sargent, and Wright, right? And those Haji are the three Wright. That
yeah.
went?
Yeah.
I think...
Brendan didn't make it, right? Brendan Vasquez didn't make it then.
Brendan Vasquez did not go to the World Cup. No.
So, to me, it's like... It's kind of silly to say, oh, well, his form after he broke his arm and went to a better league. He got a transfer to a better league. At some point, we have to consider that like a positive, right? And I get that means you may not, you know, show it on the pitch week in and week out because of the timing. But it's still the right move for Pepe, and it still feels like the right move for Fulham. Now, that doesn't mean it works out perfectly, but I believe he has all the tools to make it the right move. So it's like, it's weird. It's like, yo, all right, you hooking up with a billionaire. Maybe you can't make it to my birthday party, but hey, I'm happy for you. You know what I mean? You know?
Okay.
Like, to me, it's the World Cup is super important. It's a World Cup in the USA. I'm sure he wants to be a part of it. But this is still the right move for his career. The timing just feels a little off, and I'm a little worried he's not going to be able to show it to a Pochettino, who can be a little erratic sometimes.
Long term, I think that it is the right move. And again, how could you, if a Premier League team wants you, you go. I like there's few, unless it's like Wolverhampton right now, you're probably saying yes.
Yeah,
so.
If a good Premier League club wants you, right?
So, I hope it works out. I hope that this doesn't necessarily hurt his chances of like getting to the World Cup. But it's always a big story when a Premier League club is looking at an American striker
Fulham.
For their
Remember,
club.
Remember, they were they were full America for a while. They've had a lot of American players. They've had a lot of success with American players. Anthony Robinson, Tim Ream just left not too long ago. McBride.
Not cheap. Either. It's big money, especially for a team like Fulham. So,
Although, is $40 million a lot for a Premier League team? Because how much did West Ham pay for Tati?
They didn't pay 40.
No, but they paid a lot of money. I think 28, 30 million?
Producer, get on there. What was the amount? Because I don't remember. But I don't think it was 40.
No, it was 28
to 30. Okay. I mean... That seems like a significant amount of money.
That's a good amount of money for Tati Castellanos, who wasn't scoring at Lazio. For me, $40 million is like, that's a lot of money for Eredivisie. But Premier League's like, bro, this is pocket change. It's like the rich guy who bought my drinks. You know what I mean? That's nothing.
I think there's sort of a how much is every Premier League goal worth, right? Like Erling Haaland. Him getting what was how many goals when he broke the record? 30 something.
Yeah.
That amount. Oh, so £25 million for Tati confirmed, right? So, but there's like a the value of each Premier League goals is more, right? So if you pay $40 million for Pepe and you get 12 to 15 goals in a season. 12 to 15 goals in the Eredivisie is probably that's not worth $40 million, but Premier League it probably very much is. So, that's just something to consider. But no, like I said, a positive thing overall for an American player to be kind of this sought after, even with a broken arm. I mean, kind of says something about the trust and the value that they see in Ricardo Pepe.
But, and they're also not scared of his. I don't want to call him injury prone, but he has had a slew of injuries since moving to Europe.
Well, you don't need your arms to play soccer. So I
say cut
worried.
It off. You know what I mean? Get out there, boss. Pellegrino Matarazzo, a name that's so fun to say. He is an American coach absolutely killing it in La Liga right now, to the surprise of a lot of people. What do we think of the job he's doing, and is it changing the perception of American coaches in Europe?
This man is from Wayne, New Jersey.
Bro, and grew up in Fairlawn.
And he is beat Barcelona, has had a spectacular start. I mean, this is, you know, once you hear American and manager in La Liga, you're expecting, you're really not expecting that much. And his start at Real Sociedad has been remarkable, to say the least. But I'll start here. Because Chris Italia, the homie, owner of the Stand, he had commented the other day when we talked about Pellegrino Matarazzo joining Real Sociedad. He was like, we were like, oh, American coach. And he's like, hey, yeah, but he's Italian. Yes, Chris Italia.
What are the odds?
Is pointing out.
That a guy named Chris Italia, you know, who owns a club and treats it like a no-show, would say he's Italian. Now, he is. His parents are both Italian immigrants. Yes. So about 100 years too late to be considered Italian-American. But he is. And look, you got the name Pellegrino Matarazzo, which, by the way, I think is actually helping him in Europe. Like if his name was you know, Tony Italia, he might not get as much work. But because he's Pellegrino Matarazzo, which is a clue, if you have a child and you want them to do big things in the world of football, you got to name him in a way that makes them think he ain't from America. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
You know, you went with Matteo Polanco. This kid's got a future. You know what I mean? Okay.
I was going to go with throw-in corner kick Polanco.
He's going to be an Arsenal player.
Okay.
I'm going with Alexis Drinkwater Jr. And the kid, let me tell you something. What a championship career is going to have. It's going to be bad in the Premier League.
The funny thing is, like, you could point out that he is, you know, of Italian descent. But it wasn't like he cut his teeth coaching and playing in Italy. I mean, lower leagues in Germany, right? So he didn't play at an incredibly high level. But you know, his passion was coaching, and this is, and you know, he spent a lot of time. Where did he go? He went to collegiate varsity sport. He played men's soccer at Columbia University. Okay, he grew up in the U.S. and around U.S. soccer culture. This is his brain is.
He went to Colombia, not Colombia. You know what I mean? He's right. From the U.S. He's very much an East Coast kid.
Yeah, he didn't grow up in the streets of Turin learning about calcio. Like, I mean, yes, clearly he's influenced by his Italian background. But this is a thing where the kind of American soccer kind of like culture sort of claims him as one of our own, right? So,
he's getting opportunities that a lot of American coaches haven't gotten. One, he's getting second chances. How many American coaches, you know, have gotten second chances in Europe, right?
Right.
The Jesse Marshes of them all, the, you know, Bob Bradleys of them all, the Chris Armises of them all. They never got those opportunities. You know, it carries a lot of weight, or I should say it carries a lot of baggage being an American in any form of the sport out there, whether it's commentary, playing, coaching, anything at all, to be able to break through and do what he's done, and not even mention just the change that has happened in Real Sociedad. If you look at where they were in the league standings, they were, before taking over, they were at 16 points, if I'm not mistaken. They're at 27 now. They are in almost nearly in a European position when they were flirting with the idea of relegation before he got there. So the wins have been huge. They were down to 10 men against Celta Vigo. They won that 3-1. He's gotten Oyarzabal to play well. He's gotten everyone to sort of play at a higher level. And also, and I think this kind of leads to a little bit of the conversation with Manchester United, which we'll have in a little bit, but it's like getting players that felt like they were playing in mud, you know, stuck, to suddenly feel free and to play at a different level and to make decisions for themselves out on the pitch. An American is getting European players to do that. That's a huge win for, you know, the perception of American coaches. It's also a huge win for a guy like Pellegrino Matarazzo, who spent years in the lower leagues in Germany and is now getting these big opportunities. We had a segment where we talked about it a few weeks ago or a week or two ago, where, yo, is this too big of a leap? Is he going to a place that's good right now? Should he have waited for a better opportunity? He made this into a good opportunity. And on the cusp, they beat Barcelona right before the biggest festival in their region, which is called Tamborazo, which is like, it's like a march through the streets playing drums or whatever. It's supposed to, I forget what it's signaling. But when he came back, he was like the star of the entire fest, the biggest day in his town. He was the star of it. Like, this is an American. This is a dude who got a gyro at Wayne Town Center. You know what I mean? This is a dude who's ordered a Taylor ham, egg, and cheese at Bloomfield's Best Bagels. This is crazy.
I mean, maybe that's why his professional career didn't go as far as it wanted. It was a little heavier because
you need the sodium. By the way, you know, everyone who lives over 100 has high cholesterol. So maybe in the end, the Taylor ham, egg, and cheese is right.
Okay, everyone, go to Kalshi and let's see if Alexis makes it to 100.
I don't have high cholesterol. Thank you very much.
Let's see these bets. All right, but this is a look. The his record so far: three wins and one draw. And then really the win against Barcelona. It was. I mean, again, these are from going to, battling in relegation to where Real Sociedad are now is. If any manager does it, this has to be applauded. And the fact that it's an American manager doing this, I mean, we have to, you know, when we spoke about his appointment, we were, I was just saying, like, if this works out for him, this puts him immediately in the conversation of future USMNT manager. And now these victories are incredible. I mean, again, beating Barcelona is huge for, you know, the other 19 clubs that are in La Liga, and to get Real Sociedad to be in a to be where they should be, which is they're effectively a lower Champions League, upper Europa team. They're always pretty much there. So just
they always feel like they're on the cusp of breaking into that, like the big three, you know, in Italy. In Spain. Again, it's Real Madrid, it's Barcelona, Atletico Madrid holding on, and then everyone else. Real Sociedad has the skill, the requisite, the type of players, the pedigree, if you will, to be in that top. Because if you look at all the players that have come from Real Sociedad, you'd be like, yo, that if they would have stayed there, that's probably you're winning the league with these types of players. It's kind of crazy, and what I'm about to ask you feels a little bit like I'm pretending to be an English fan right now. But do you expect Mauricio Pochettino to stay on after the World Cup with the U.S. men's national team?
I do not, no.
I do not either. So it looks like
he's way too sought after. Yeah.
Men's national team is probably going to have to find another coach.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the right guy?
What's the... How do you answer that question? Like the right guy? There's a yes or no. There is a it's always whoever the USMNT manager is like it's maybe the right guy or girl of the moment, like whoever can possibly kind of inspire the players at the right time. But immediately after the World Cup, if Pochettino leaves, you would imagine Matarazzo, and if again has a continued good season at Real Sociedad, he is staying there. He should probably be there a little bit longer. And whoever is the next USMNT manager doesn't mean they're the next manager for the World Cup, the following World Cup. So I'm not in any rush to get him in that position. But if he continues doing this and again continues to show that kind of like inspiration, because Real Sociedad are a team that are like better than the sum of their parts. So if he can do that, you would love for him to kind of bring that philosophy or style to the USMNT. But
it almost feels like he wouldn't take the job, because I feel like there's a feeling of like we're seeing his ascendancy. You know what I mean? I don't feel like Real Sociedad, even if he stays there for the next 5 years, and let's say he wins like a Europa, you know what I mean? Or a conference league, you know, it's still huge. You know, there's a massive, right? So I don't want to discredit Real Sociedad, because I don't want to say what I'm about to say, make it sound negative, but it feels like he has the potential to be at an even higher level as a coach. he has to prove it by winning something. I don't feel like it's going to be La Liga. So if he can win a Copa del Rey and something else, maybe a secondary cup, or he can win something like a Europa, I think that you're going to start to see offers come in from bigger clubs, whether it's back to Bundesliga, whether it's maybe a bigger club, maybe a Ligue 1 or something like that. Something at a higher level, and maybe Ligue 1 is a tough place, but you get what I'm saying. Maybe like an Inter Milan or something. Something where it's clearly like the next step in level from Real Sociedad. I'm impressed with what he's done so far, and I would almost say if he was offered the U.S. men's national team job right after the World Cup, it might be too soon for him to leave the club game because it still feels like there's more for him to win.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, more than anything, it's just you got to applaud this guy the last couple of weeks. Their next match is against, obviously, Athletic Bilbao and the little Basque derby. So it's like, again, when we spoke about his appointment a couple of weeks ago, for this to be the result of his four matches, is, I mean, I did not think it would go this well. Shouts to him. He's just getting the team in incredibly good form and just kind of representing what, I think I said this last time, but like if he does well, this is also an opportunity for other American managers to find opportunities because, again, that stigma is so strongly attached to American managers or American players and all this other stuff. That this could be kind of the turning of the tide of just like raising that level, not only for players, but also managers as well, which therefore helps the U.S. soccer like program as a whole. So shouts to Pellegrino Matarazzo, man. This is, I'm happy to see this. And, you know, I was watching the game against Celta Vigo and then they were a downer, man. And but it never, they were incredibly composed and still showed a lot of heart. And then they ended up getting a late penalty to kind of ice the game. But yeah, this I think that having a new manager there and having him there is really what is kind of inspiring these guys.
Yo, Manchester United used to be the club that I absolutely hated facing. But ever since Fergie left, it's been kind of fun seeing how they're going to capitulate. Although, are the old Manchester United back?
Well, look, Michael Carrick has won two huge matches against Premier League title contenders, which for me is enough to earn the job at Manchester United.
Yeah, but it's just two wins. Are Premier League fans like making too much of just two wins, though?
I don't know if, look, I'm not a Manchester United fan, but if you beat Manchester City, your rival in your city, and you beat the team in first place with all the chaos and tumultuousness that is Manchester United these last couple of years, they're currently in fourth place from last season, 17th or whatever. They're currently in fourth place, which is I can't even imagine. I did not think this is the season they would be having. They've had a up and down kind of season, and for them to be in a Champions League spot right now, it's not to say that they've done everything right, but they've clearly found some level of like belief. I don't know if that's necessarily in Michael Carrick, but just the fact that Amorim is gone, and maybe that was too much of a distraction. Maybe he was too authoritarian. Maybe he was too mean. I don't know. But
what I'm going to say about Amorim is it feels like he didn't get the full. I'll say that. I'm going to finish that sentence. But first, I want to say the first part, because if not, everyone's going to call me crazy. Michael Carrick seems like the right guy for this squad. More importantly, he feels like the right guy for a team like Manchester United. Because what I see a lot of in my time being a fan of the sport in England is sometimes you have to have the right demeanor and the right look to be a Premier League manager for a team at the level of Manchester United. This goes back to, like, remember Van Nistelrooy? Oh, he looks so managerial. Oh, look, he's wearing a turtleneck and a blazer. Oh, sure. My God. So, I mean, the way you carry yourself on the pitch, for some reason, Manchester United fans need that as well. You can't just be a tactician if you're kind of nebbishy or a little nerdy or too eccentric. It's too much for them. You know what I mean? I need a dad-like figure. You know, that's kind of their mentality sometimes. And Michael Carrick fits that. He's a little bit stoic. You know, he doesn't get rattled easily. He's not a little douchey in his responses to the media. And Amram sometimes came across that way. He seemed too cool, too young sometimes. You know, these people make too much of like what he wore to the training facility, like that kind of stuff. Like they kind of want someone who's closer to Fergie than they are, you know, to like Arteta or anything. Yeah. They need that sort of stoic figure. I don't know why. I think it's a bit silly. That sometimes leads you down the road to a different manager. But the reason why I think it was Amram got a raw deal in a way versus Michael Carrick is because, to me, Michael Carrick is the perfect person right now because he knows, he looks at the team and goes, all right, this literally fits the system I want. Where I felt like the reason Amram didn't work out was he was promised that he was able to sort of flip a lot of these players over and get to a squad that fit the system he wanted, and it never happened. So it was constantly him trying to force these players to play out of position. And I know he made a lot of those transfer decisions on his own, and I know he picked a lot of these players. But if you read why he had an argument with the board towards the end and why he decided, you know what, I'm just going to go out my way, which I believe was the Leeds match, is because he was promised he was going to get even more changes and even more different players. And the board was like, yo, we're running out of money. There's not enough people to fire in this company to be able to get you that money. So in a way, yes, Ruben Amorim was not the right coach, but had he been given everything he was promised, I still believe he would have been as successful as what we're seeing from Michael Carrick. Because really, Darren Fletcher didn't do that great of a job. And Michael Carrick, with two huge wins, already has them in fourth. So it's not like they were in 17th still, right?
Right. Yeah.
For Michael Carrick, all he did was say, yo, I think these guys would play better if you just put them in the position that they play best in. And look at how they are balling.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel the same way. I do think Amram got so much resistance and pushback from players, from the board, from all this other stuff. And ultimately, I probably think he would have done fine. And, you know, at least allowed himself to, like, get to a consistent place. I don't know. You know, Michael Carrick has been the interim manager in the past, and they've moved on from him. Manchester United overall, I think they're like sort of too hopped up on their own like sort of ego of like what they think the club should be, right? The year that they finished second with, was it Mourinho or with Solskjaer?
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, he finished second, yeah.
And it's like, not good enough. We got it. And that is you can't have that mentality. Like, it's second, it's like what pretty
we
good.
About, it's like what we talked about with Real Madrid. It's like, you can't be the only team that wins ever. You know what I mean?
And I don't know what is the outside forces that are pressuring, that are putting that much pressure where second is not good enough is... It, to me, it's kind of crazy, for especially because look at what you've had, right? It's been a miserable the last like 7-8 years. So overall, look, Michael Carrick getting these two wins. I mean, beat the way they won against Arsenal at the Emirates. The Arsenal's corners, and then they gave up another goal and kind of a late equalizer. And after Arsenal scored that goal, I'm like, they're going to win this game. They're at home. The crowd is behind them. And for Matheus Cunha to score that goal, Dorgu's goal and Cunha's goal. But Cunha to still find that kind of inspiration and heart towards the end. Like, they did not give up and still wanted that. That's a huge win for Manchester United. I mean, the win against Arsenal means more to Manchester United than the loss by Arsenal to Manchester United. Like, their season is not derailed.
As an Arsenal fan, I could argue that because I have emotions. Sure. But I guess the point you're making is I think, you know, on top of that, it's amplified even further because I agree with you. The fact that the two wins have come back to back, right? You know, like the win against Manchester City. Oh, okay. Maybe you surprised them with new tactics and City weren't able to prepare. You know what I mean? Well, everybody at Arsenal saw what you were going to do. You know what I mean? There's a lot of iPads on the pitch side, on the sideline for Arsenal. Every one of those iPads already got all your game tape. We already know how you like to play. And you could have watched Middlesbrough back when, you know, in some of the highlights for Middlesbrough to see how Carrick was, what he was going to do. He did it, and it was still fairly effective. And at the end of the day, I still think Arsenal for most of that game showed they kind of didn't have that extra oomph that it takes to win. They got beaten by two worldies. The difference for me, and it's like, as an Arsenal fan, it's frustrating, but I'm also like, all right, how often are teams going to be able to do that to you? Not often. So I'm not like ultimately that worried. It just feels like Arsenal are starting to fail a little bit. And right at the same time, they seem to fail every year. That, but table that to the side. When I look at what happened to Manchester United, the difference is Cunha and Dorgu were confident enough to take those strikes in those moments. That's something that you didn't often see under Amorim. Amorim felt to me like kind of like the Greg Berhalter towards the end of his run at U.S. men's national team. It felt like the players were playing under so much pressure to do the right thing that the coach wanted them to do when they had the ball versus go out and show me you're a great player, which is kind of like an old school thing, but it seems to be coming back, which is like, go out there and be a maverick. Yo, if you see space, take the ball. Like, look at highlights from like the early 2000s and the 90s. Players are doing that. You look at highlights from the last 10 years, it's tap-ins. You know what I mean? It's players, you know, making the right pass versus here. It's like, oh, I got space.
Yeah. Boring.
I actually like that more because it's a bit more consistent and you can plan for that. But there's not, you can't say anything when a player sees space. He's like, watch this, you know? And yeah, that's a FIFA goal. Those are two FIFA or EAFC goals.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, I would argue the more impressive win was against City, because they shut them out, and we've all sort of seen, if you're hyper online like us, like a lot of soccer folks, the Paul Scholes and Nicky Butt comments about Lisandro Martinez saying that Erling Haaland is going to literally carry him and walk him around the pitch and stuff like that, and you know, making fun of his height and all this other stuff, and then Erling Haaland is completely shut out of that game. To me, that shows the kind of inspiring those players again, because it's the big issue with Manchester United is just their kind of defensive mistakes, and you can sort of mock Lisandro Martinez about his height, but it's like the dude won a World Cup being that tall. He is a center back and he is small. Somehow it works. If I'm making a lineup and I'm picking my 11, there's no way my biased brain is gonna say like, yo, yeah, the smallest guy is gonna be my center and or whatever, yeah. You know what I mean, in basketball. But so to me that was just so incredibly impressive. But these two wins, I mean, what else do you need to like earn an opportunity, right? Mikel Arteta, look, we got this stat from OptiJoe. Arsenal have only lost two games under Mikel Arteta when they've scored at least twice. They 2-3 versus Michael Carrick's Manchester United in 2021, and again 2-3 against Carrick's Manchester United in January 2026.
Is there a reason why we're reading these stats? We don't need this. We don't need
these are interesting stats. I mean, I don't know if that says anything specific to Michael Carrick. Maybe he knows how to handle Mikel Arteta's Arsenal squad, but it's impressive to say the least. I mean, if he would have beaten Wolves and Leeds, I'm not here making the argument that he should be the manager. But these are two huge wins with a lot of pressure, and one of them was away at the Emirates against the league leaders right now. I say you give him an opportunity with the full managerial job.
I just think I think it's still too early to say that. Proved to me across the stretch of a season, he couldn't get Middlesbrough into the Premier League, and eventually that's kind of what cost him his job at Middlesbrough. So prove to me that you can end a season as strong as you started it, because you certainly have started your career at Manchester, or at least this part of your career as a Manchester United.
Do you think he doesn't finish the season as the manager?
Unless it's a complete collapse from this point out, there's no reason to say he doesn't finish off the season. I think he's first in line right now for the job as the full-time manager or head coach, because they don't have managers anymore, a full-time head coach for Manchester United. The difference is, he has to finish as strong as he started. If he gets them into a Champions League position, I don't think he's not going to win the league. He's 12 points behind Arsenal. I don't think that's too much of a gap to close.
Yeah.
But if he finishes in a Champions League position, he's the manager of Manchester United and or the head coach, and he deserves it. He absolutely deserves it.
Without a doubt. We couldn't be happier that Trinity Rodman is staying in the NWSL and just got the biggest contract in all of women's soccer. But the way she got it might have just screwed every other player in NWSL.
So the league created a new rule called high impact player, which could also be said, you know, hey, everyone else besides these few players, go get a second job.
Yeah, that's a bit of a concern here. The hip rule, the high impact player, I think we've spoken about it a little bit in the past, but this is something it has a lot of contention. So right now where we're at, Trini Rodman gets a contract, but reports are sort of saying that it's around $2 million a season, making her the highest paid women's soccer player,
by the way,
in the world.
For her and Michelle Kang.
Well done. Good piece of good business for everybody involved, right?
But for everybody else.
So the real issue here is not, the issue is not targeted here at Trinity Rodman. Go get paid. You have to get paid, right? Do your thing. The concern here is the NWSL's high impact player rule, which is kind of similar to MLS's designated player rule, where you can pay a player and it doesn't affect the salary cap. So you're allowed to have three of those. High impact player thing is a little bit different in the sense that the players that are eligible to be high impact players are players that meet a certain level of criteria. So a lot of this stuff is kind of like boring, but like where you're voted in the like FIFA Best 11 and your other accolades outside of simply like what you do on the field. I don't know. Basically marketable players. This is what NWSL is saying. Hey, we want you to be able to keep your players and bring in big talent, but those players have to be players that affect the league positively outside of simply what they do on the field, I've never heard of anything like this before, and it's causing a lot of problems with the players' union.
For good reason. Yeah. One, I want to give NWSL credit. You kept Trinity Rodman, something that I thought was going to be impossible, but something I thought that was important to do. We all said that. But if you remember on this show, we had a segment where we talked about this. I specifically said, as long as you don't do it in the MLS way. And then they went and did it in the MLS way. But they did it in a slightly less effective version. Yeah.
Way worse way.
Who is going to pay players millions of dollars if they're not marketable? Nobody. So what you did was you said, hey, don't go out there and spend $100,000 on a car and make it a Toyota Corolla. Who's going to do that? Nobody. Nobody goes to a dealership and offers more for a Toyota Corolla. But what you did do was you forced owners to sit there and think, okay, we now all have to go out and get an HIP player, essentially, right? Or two, and we're going to have to pay them all that, but everyone else gets to stay at, what was it, $54,000? $55,000?
The minimum, the league minimum, yeah.
Which a lot of players are making, right? If you go to MLS now, the level has risen to where a lot of players aren't making the minimum anymore in MLS. So in a way, the floor has been risen. We haven't got there yet in NWSL, and the biggest issue in NWSL isn't just keeping your biggest stars. That is a big issue. But the other part is a lot of the players that are on the pitch with these superstars are barely making ends meet, or they're still forced to live roommates in small apartments. And some of them do additional coaching and additional things in their offseason, as opposed to letting their bodies repair. They're going and forcing themselves to do more and more and more so they can continue to make enough money to be a livable wage. So I'm not going to sit here and say, this is Trinity Rodman's fault, Michelle Kang's fault. It's absolutely not. All sites, all the issue, all the red flags are on the league side, because what you've done is you've raised the ceiling. Congratulations. You forgot to raise the floor.
Yeah, but and just to add some more context, the floor does go up with this, the collective bargaining agreement. So each year it does go up a little bit. I think I think in 2028 or something like that is when this collective bargaining agreement ends, and the floor will be higher. I don't know the exact number, but I would say that they've artificially inflated the ceiling, by doing this high impact player thing. So, and this is something, the odd part here is that, yes, I don't want to necessarily pat NWSL on the back for creating a mechanism to keep Trinity Rodman in the league, when every other every GM basically is like, you just raise the salary cap. Please just raise the salary cap, and that will make things a little bit easier. The salary cap right now is $3.5 million that you can spend on your roster, which is, you know, when we had Allie Krieger on the show recently, she was also saying, like, it's just too low to be able to keep the amount of talent that you want to keep. Now, the issue, the players' union has kind of challenged this, and it's probably going to, like, go to court or some sort of, like, arbitration or something like that, because the only way that the Washington Spirit were going to be able to keep Trinity Rodman is by using this rule. Therefore, now if they challenge that and then we find out that this rule was not valid or it doesn't end up being implemented permanently, what does that mean for Trinity Rodman's contract? Is it get annulled? Do they just change the rule and say, like, hey, we're going to raise the salary cap? But my issue here...
Can I tell you why that I don't care about what happens to her contract? Because what happens now is Michelle Kang and Trinity Rodman may have... I'm going to use the word saved NWSL, because they've proven that there is money to pay these players more. There is a lot more available to pay players, and that women's players should be paid more. Do you understand what I mean?
Sure. Like,
if this contract gets null and void because of this lawsuit, it won't matter, because now everyone knows the jig is up. It's not that there's owners out there that value these players at higher monetary value. And to me, that's the issue. The issue is you're stopping owners from being able to pay the players what they deserve by saying the salary cap is X. And I'll continue to say this. I don't understand why NWSL doesn't see the opportunity to be the first to do certain things. You could have been the first to have promotion and relegation. USL looks like they're going to beat you to it. That would have been a huge win for NWSL. It would have been a huge talking point. And every season, it would have been a massive story at the end of every year. They could also be the first to just go to a luxury tax model. And let me ask you, Christian, a woman who has given so much money to U.S. soccer, a woman that's invested so much into Washington Spirit and some of the other clubs that she owns, a woman who's invested so much in just Trinity Rodman, do you think she would even blink at the idea of a luxury tax? She'd have Washington Spirit would be a global super club.
I agree. I mean, you're sort of highlighting the league, like the league should do this or do that. I mean, I would probably be more specific. I don't think it's the league. Jessica Berman, the commissioner, is a representative of what the owners want. She is the mouthpiece for the conversation that all the owners are having. My issue is, like, what are the owners that do not want the salary cap raise? Because clearly they are the majority.
Yeah, come on, right? Brokies, raise your hand. Raise your crusty hand if you don't want this.
These are all, like, if it goes from the salary cap goes from 3.5 million to 4.5 million or 5 million. I can't imagine they're asking for a tremendous amount of money for all the teams and all the rosters. Who's gonna really scoff at this? I mean, but clearly somebody is, right? There must be significant amount of teams that are like, no, we just don't want to do it. And look, the players, they have free agency right now, which makes things the players themselves have a lot of autonomy. They can decide where they want to go. They can say that, hey, I don't want to be traded. I don't want to go there. Which is how the rest of the world does it, right? And I think American owners are not used to players having that amount of power. And then if they raise the salary cap, that I think that's kind of what they're worried about, that they're giving too much leverage to the players. But at the end of the day, you end up hurting your product, because if they lost Trinity Rodman, or say this case becomes a bigger deal and Trinity Rodman can't be a Washington Spirit player, that's a tremendous loss. I mean, and there's for the sake of, like, capitalism and competition and all this other stuff, you've made the wrong decision. Spend a little bit more money. The league is not going to go under. You have two new teams. You have this expansion money coming in. It just seems like a terrible hill to die on. And they could have just avoided all of this by doing the, like, you know, giving Trinity Rodman her money with the expectation that the salary cap was going to increase after the collective bargaining agreement was over. But they were like, no, that goes against the spirit of the game. They didn't want to do all that. Look, I'm glad she's staying. I think, you know, Chirton Robin had spoken about it. She said that, basically job's not finished. She hasn't done what she wanted to do with the Washington Spirit. She won the NWSL championship her rookie season, but then also lost two times in the final. So I think that leaves a very bitter taste in her mouth, and she wants much more success. And realistically, like, if Gotham doesn't have this season that they seem to turn things on in the playoffs, they lost to Orlando, who had an incredible season the year prior. They've just faced opponents that were in great form, and Trinity Robin was also dealing with injuries, especially this season. So I can see why she wanted to stay, but yeah, this is kind of disappointing how this all happened, because one, she deserves her money and the league should be in a better place. You know, like Trinity Rodman, the way David Beckham transformed the league with the DP rule, which was it shouldn't have necessarily needed that, but at that time it did. We didn't need a DP rule for NWSL right now. Like, just a kind of a realistic raise of the salary cap would have kind of alleviated a lot of these problems and be able to just easily keep a player like Trinity Robin in the league. But now we have a lot of other questions and a lot of other drama around it. And we'll see how this affects the league as a whole, because, again, the players union is not happy with it. And it's not a great look overall to express how you value the players by introducing this rule.
The only part I want to push back is, if you raise the salary cap by $1 million, that still is not enough to have paid Trinity Rum and the $2 million that she deserves. She is a player that brings you that back in value. So she wouldn't have been able to get that, because let's say you raise the salary cap to 4.5, she eats up everything but 2.5. Now that's 2.5 for everyone else. When, if you look at it from a bird's eye view, there's no reason, and I get Champions League is a huge draw, but there's no reason why, you know, the NWSL has the chance to be the NBA of the world, you know, where that's the league you want to go play in. That's the league you want to be a star in. That's the league where you're going to get paid the best, where the best players in Europe decide they want to play here. Inverse of what happens in the world of football outside of the women's league game. So Aitana Bonmati, you know, the Lena Obadorfs, the, you know, Ingrid Engines, these players should be dreaming of playing for NWSL, not staying in Europe. You know, the Emily Foxes and all these players should be, oh, well, of course, I'm already in NWSL. Why would I leave to go to WSL? I should stay here. The NWSL has a chance to do that. And it's a group of owners that are being way too pragmatic with valuations and potential revenue. When you see you're on the cusp of something major here, the league, whether it's the league official, the seven people in a business meeting, or it's the group of owners that are stalling what's happening, it's the same thing with MLS. MLS has these opportunities to be bigger and bigger and bigger, and they're constantly falling behind because they're afraid to make those big changes. They're afraid to make those major steps forward. NWSL is following in that track, and we've already seen how frustrating that is for fans and for everyone else. Why are you doing the same thing? Be bold. Make those major moves. Be the league of choice for women's soccer around the world. You are right on the cusp of doing it.
Thank you again, everybody. Shout out to everybody hanging out with us, joining us on the pod. We appreciate it, per usual. Y'all the absolute best. Make sure you follow us everywhere at Soccer Cooligans. Likes on YouTube. Hit subscribe on YouTube. Hit the thumbs up. Do whatever you gotta
do. Did you just take Benadryl before doing
that? I'm just, you know, this is just, you know, it's been a long day. We're trapped inside because there's 2 feet of snow outside my house. Right? But thank you everybody for tuning in. And as always, obviously the last the few days have been, you know, we have a lot of friends on the ground in
Shouts
Minnesota.
Shouts to Minnesota. Shouts to everyone at St. Paul, Minnesota, Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Yeah, and it's been, like, I think for a lot of soccer fans and just, you know, human beings in general, it's all this stuff is really, really difficult to see and witness. And I just want to show a lot of love and support to especially all of our Minnesota friends that are, you know, have their whistles out and you know, really just fighting back and pushing back on just what is a ridiculous show of brutal and violent force that ICE is showing. So I just want to make sure they hear that and know that we're thinking about them, because this is pretty ridiculous. But as always, we appreciate you hanging out with us, and just know that we're thinking about you guys and everything that you guys are going through. So, all right, everybody. Thank you again for tuning in to another episode. We'll see you on, what's today? Today is Monday. We'll see you on Thursday with a brand new, Alexa, you're going to be away.
Yeah, I will be away, but you will still see us as Cooligans. Don't worry about
yes,
it.
Yes, yeah.
So, I'm just going to look a lot prettier. Probably be a lot smarter, actually.
All right, so we'll see you on Thursday, everybody. Peace.
Love you guys. Unless you're wearing a snood.